This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. We just spent an hour with Lamar Waldron going through all the various things that George Herbert Walker Bush was involved with. Many of them rather shocking. And so anyhow, it's anything goes Friday. We can talk about that. We can talk about whatever you'd like. I've got some news stories I'll be getting to over the next couple of hours as we continue through the program today. But let's just start out with your phone calls. Joy in Hornbrook, California. Hey, Joy. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to give you kudos for not talking about like this about Bush before he was buried. On Monday, Democracy Now!, I know they were doing it just to be on record with this stuff, but they did a whole hour on what wasn't good about his presidency. And a lot of it was very public stuff. It wasn't like kind of the things that Lamar was talking about. And it really hit me wrong. And it got me thinking that, you know, we have to be very careful now if we want to take this country back and make real change, how we speak of everyone. And otherwise, we just end up sounding like the left-leaning versions of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Donald Trump, Newt Gingrich.
And well, I think what we're doing is fact-based, at least, Joy.
I know.
And my thought on this, my thought on this is that if we don't, you know, to paraphrase George Santayana, if we don't remember history, we are doomed to repeat it. And frankly, I think we are repeating it right now. And the points that Lamar kept making about, you know, and George Bush committed this crime, and you know, the Democrats knew about it and they chose not to prosecute it. You know, that came up three times, as I recall, his involvement with Iran-Contra, his involvement with Holt keeping the hostages so that Jimmy Carter would lose the election, his involvement with Saudi Arabia that set up 9/11, his involvement with the Bin Laden family, and the Democrats let Bush Sr. skate every time. And Lamar's final, you know, warning was, you know, when it comes time to prosecute Trump, don't, you know, and like with the Democrats, I mean, there was 70 people prosecuted during the Nixon impeachment. There was another 100 or so who could easily have been prosecuted, and George Bush was among them. And he's like, or many of the people around him too, don't let that stuff slide. Back to you, Jill.
Right. I think, and I very much appreciated what Lamar said. One of the most important things, as you just said, is he didn't do it in a vacuum.
Right.
And therefore, what we need to do, especially with the millennials, because I think they are tuned in to what's right, and we need to, to me, if you don't do due process, the rule of law, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, as far as I'm concerned, that's un-American.
Yep.
And I've made that point before. Superman stands for truth, justice, and the American way.
Yep.
And I think as long as we are fact-based, evidence-shown, presenting all sides, yep, as good historians do, and sometimes it takes a while, I think we can keep the millennials and help to really bring about real change that might actually save the planet.
I agree.
I have a neighbor who just figures he's a progressive, but he's just given up. He feels we're all going to be extinct by 2100.
We can't give up, Joy. And I wanted to get these things on the record. Joy, thank you so much. And thank you also for acknowledging that we waited until after he was buried to bring this stuff up. I felt uncomfortable doing it before today, frankly. And in fact, I even thought about waiting until next week. But then I thought, okay, by then the story's dead and it's, you know, nobody has any interest. But Joy, thank you. Your comments are appreciated. Patrick in Seaside, California. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I've been wanting to talk about this all week, not just the farce of the of Bush 41's funeral, but I mean, in juxtaposition.
Well, the funeral wasn't a farce.
No mention, pardon
I mean,
me?
The funeral wasn't a farce. I mean, but you know, when you're eulogizing somebody, you don't get up there and recount their crimes. The problem wasn't the funeral and the people doing the eulogies. It was the people in the media who were not, you know, who were just putting on rose-colored glasses.
Exactly, but I mean, well, it was a farce to me. I'm saying from my perspective, and you know, I mean, it was basically a week-long slobber fest over basically a war criminal, and no mention of the disappearance, and then later the body found of the great Ray Taliaferro, who, you know, next to you, Tom, and Amy Goodman, and the great Noam Chomsky, happy birthday. You know, he was one of my all-time heroes. I just feel like the whole week was watching history being erased and rewritten before our very eyes.
Well, that's why I took an entire hour on this program to say, let's get this on the record. Here's the actual history of George Herbert Walker Bush's political career.
We appreciate that, and I understand your rationale for waiting until today. I love Democracy Now, the first day out of the gun, you know. They go to a break with the Black Sabbath's War Pigs. I mean, you know, there'll be some, maybe, if you allow me a minute or so here, some dripping sarcasm, and, you know, some of my points might be facetious, but, I mean, how do we know, you know, are we underestimating to our peril the true scope of the Bush crime family's power and influence? I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe
yes, we are.
The proverbial Kaiser Soze of our day, except he didn't kill his family to scare off the proverbial Hungarians.
You don't even need to come up with analogies to demonstrate the power that the Bush crime families had over the years. And as Lamar kept pointing out in the previous hour, the Bush crime family set up the Trump crime family. And that was, you know, that was Lamar's final warning, is if we don't learn from the experience of Bush Sr. and how he got let off the hook repeatedly for high crimes and misdemeanors, and that set up his funding the Brooks Brothers riot and his working with his son Jeb to get his, you know, to commit crimes in Florida to get his brother George elected president, or not even elected. You know, ultimately they had to go to the Supreme Court and get him appointed. And that if we don't remember those things, which we certainly haven't done throughout this week, then, you know, get ready for President Tiffany Bush and or Uday or Kuse, you know, Eric or Don Jr. And I'm down with that. I completely agree with that. Thanks a lot for the call. Nicholas in San Cristobal, Mexico. Hey, Nicholas, what's up?
Mr. Hartman, how are you?
I'm well. How's AMLO doing down there?
That's what I called for. I'm going to tell you. I have a 1:20 synopsis of his 3.5 hours talk to the people, if you can bear it.
I can bear it.
Let's see if I can do it.
Just as long as you do it in English, not Spanish.
That's what I thought would be interesting, because I don't believe you speak Spanish, and how many people have 3.5 hours anyway?
Right.
And this was the most important address to people I've ever heard anywhere in the world, ever. And I'm 72, saying something at least. Here goes. Government's number one responsibility is to the people, not to itself. Root out corruption, we know all about that. A Nordic-style health care system for all Mexicans with no exceptions. Everything paid for free, including all prescriptions. If Britain could do it immediately after World War II, Mexico can do it with ease now. Scholarships will start for primary school children, and then move on into secondary school and directly on into university to keep as many people in the process of education as is humanly possible in order to have a good future. The needs of marginalized people will move immediately to the top of the list of priorities to the government. Get this word, the rapacious greed of the elite must be put in, an end must be put to it now.
Whoa, the Koch brothers of Mexico are going to be funding some serious stuff against this guy.
Tom, what's his name? Peña Nieto, the outgoing president, was sitting 2 seats from him at this point. He was mopping his brow and sweating profusely. I'm not making that up.
Wow.
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
He went on to say natural resources belong to people, of course. They lie under the ground upon which we walk. Pemex will go back to the people, as will the electric companies. No more privatization.
Wait a minute. He's nationalizing the oil and electric industries?
Again.
Wow.
It had been before. It was part...
This guy's going even farther than FDR did. You know, they're going to be accusing, next thing you know, they're going to be accusing him of being, you know, what's his name from Venezuela?
Just wait.
Yeah.
No more increases in gasoline or electric bills greater than the admitted to national inflation rate must be tied to that as a maximum, and with an initial reduction in those things. A reforestation of Mexico to employ 40,000 people. Respect for Mother Nature, because without a decent climate, we will have no future at all. A complete respect for the indigenous peoples of Mexico, without whom Mexico would not exist, because a pyramid cannot exist from the butt unless there is a solid base to it. The top will fall. He went on to say that there will be no more rubber stamping for the neoliberal cause in Mexico. That time is over. And let's see if I've missed anything.
It is a crime that the American press did not report these things, Nicholas.
I was shocked.
It's just a screaming crime.
It is. Now, when he was installed, they did a purification by smoke and incense with hundreds of indigenous people on stage. It looked like the reinstallation of Montezuma, I'm telling you.
Wow.
And he said, I don't need the purification, but please do. And they did. And he said, and now if you would please do it symbolically for the entire country from top to bottom, starting with the corrupt government under which we've suffered for the last 100 years.
Amazing.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Nicholas, thanks for the call and thanks for the update. That is an amazing story. And if you can send me a link to anything that summarizes that, I'd love to see it. Nicholas, thanks so much for the call. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Pam in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Pam, Anything Goes Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on. Love the show. First of all, brilliant comments from Nicholas, and this hopefully will add on to that. But I did want to comment on Lamar. I think what Lamar is pointing out is that we have to hold those in power to a higher standard, or else, you know, the whole society collapses.
Well, it's not even a higher standard, Pam. I mean, you know, some of the crimes that George Bush committed, if they had been committed by my CPA, he'd be in prison.
Right. Right, exactly. You know, there's a woman in Texas right now serving 5 years for accidentally voting, and here's Flynn being recommended no jail time, and he's done horrendous things. So
right.
That's just outrageous. But that's not really what I called about. What I called about is our wealth gap in this country and how our tax system is being used, and Lamar touched on this too, to transfer wealth to the wealthy. Back when Obama was running and he accepted the Democratic nomination, I was lucky enough to go to the Mile High, his acceptance speech at Mile High, and the only line, in fact, I remember that he said was, bring back the dignity of work. And I think that's something we really need to do. Right now, Wall Street literally creates money out of nothing, and you're seen as an idiot for working a regular 9-to-5 job. And we show that by not paying livable wages, not providing any kind of decent benefits, and overtaxing us.
You know, so who's been beating that drum, Pam, is Sherrod Brown.
Yes, I have recently heard him say that.
Yeah.
And so I was really excited that Obama had said that, and then nothing's happened from that. So here's how I think that we can bring back the dignity of work, and I hope Sherrod Brown is listening. So Lincoln said, labor is superior to capital because labor begets capital. You can't make anything create capital. Now, granted, right now we're creating phony money on Wall Street through hedge funds and stuff, but that's not a real economy. But you really need labor to create capital. One of Gandhi's seven sins was wealth without work, and arguably he could have had an eighth sin there, work without wealth, or at least a decent standard of living. So our tax system has, as we all know, and you've mentioned many times, has become a way to shift wealth to the wealthy. So how do we resolve that? Well, we use our taxes, right, to encourage or discourage various behavior. So let's not tax labor, because we want to encourage that behavior. And arguably, the working people are already overtaxed through state, local, property, every service you have, every sales you do, check your utility bills, how many taxes come out of that, how about your phone bill? And maybe you can answer this. Like, I don't know if the Scandinavian countries have that many taxes. I would argue we are probably the highest tax people on the planet
because
of the hidden tax.
Pam.
And in addition to that, we had hidden taxes because we pay for our own health care, our own education, and infrastructure. I know here in Colorado and around the country, we're having more toll roads, lack of public transportation. You hit a pothole. If you're lucky enough to have a car, you blow a tire or have to go get your car serviced for front end.
Hello? Pam, did you just stop suddenly?
No, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can, but we're hitting the break.
Okay,
thank you very much. And by the way, taxes as a percentage of GDP in the United States, and that does include things like sales taxes, are a little over 20%. I think it's 21 or 22%. In the European average is in the mid-30s, and France is in the 40s, in the low 40% area. Most of Scandinavia is in the low 40s, just FYI. Pam, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Kevin in Plummer, Idaho. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Great fan. Listened to you for years. I just heard something the other day about an outfit called Q-Nan, and I don't know much about it. And I'm just calling, and I'll let you go here and let you talk on it if you would. Just what your take is on all that. So,
you know, we did a story on this a couple of months ago when it first got hot in the right-wing blogosphere or whatever. You know, Q, what's, you know, and the whole Q theory is that there is this deep state that is, you know, of people who are embedded in the government, who are dancing to the tune of George Soros and you know, and that's always code for international Jews, you know, which is the boogeyman for the hard right. It's insanely anti-Semitic trope. But that these folks are embedded in the government and their mission is to destroy Donald Trump. And there was a soldier a couple of days ago who was in a photo op with Trump or with somebody from his administration who got bounced out of the detail that he was in because he had a Q patch on. But that's what it is. It's a bizarre right-wing conspiracy theory. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
That's about how I felt on it. I just wanted your take, and I appreciate it, Tom. And
sure.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Kevin. Thanks for watching us there in Plummer, Idaho. Paul in Lucerne, California. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Paul.
Sorry to change the subject a little bit.
No, it's anything goes Friday. That's what we do all day.
I'd like to talk about the methane problem in the ocean. Everybody's talking about how methane's a really potent greenhouse gas. But I never hear anybody mention how it also consumes oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Methane is the reason why oxygen doesn't go above 24.6%. Methane keeps oxygen in check. Now, if we have way more methane in the air, our oxygen is going to drop down. Now, if it drops down below 22.4%, game over for mammals.
Yeah, I think you're exaggerating it, Paul. And methane doesn't displace oxygen. The way that methane would arguably reduce oxygen in the atmosphere would be, because methane is CH4, it's carbon and four hydrogen atoms. And so when methane burns, oxidizes, you're taking oxygen, O2, out of the atmosphere, combining it with that carbon or combining it with the hydrogen. When it combines with the carbon, you end up with one molecule of CO2. When it combines with the hydrogen, you end up with water, H2O. It took me a minute.
That's how
the oxygen gets tied up. You know, it gets taken out of the atmosphere because it gets bound up in the form of those two chemicals or those two molecules rather. But your point is well taken. And also we've got enormous amounts of frozen methane or slurry methane on the floor of the ocean. And if that stuff is mobilized in the atmosphere because the oceans are warming and it warms up to the point where it moves from a solid state to a gaseous state and bubbles up through the ocean, as is happening right now in lakes and permafrost all over the Arctic from Russia to Alaska, if that methane seriously mobilizes, you know, it is seriously game over for the planet. Paul, thanks for the call. David in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, I wanted to mention something that's not been discussed here, and that was the 1989 tax reform bill.
George Herbert Walker Bush was president.
Yes, and this, if you remember back at that time, there was heavy lobbying by Manpower and all these, how we couldn't compete because we didn't have contractors. Mm-hmm. And I'd worked as a subcontractor before then, and if you worked over 35 hours, they had to offer you the same benefits they offered the regular full-time.
Right. Isn't that law still in effect, only they reduced it to 30 hours? That's why employers are keeping people at 29 hours?
No, no. It was 35 hours. Was a little bit. I had them grab me by the collar and drag me out and say, come back next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when they changed that, they said, well, you can work them any length of time you want. There was no limit, 40 hours, and they did not have to offer you benefits.
It must be state laws I'm thinking of.
But it was mostly for C-corps, and S-corps, and K-corps. It wasn't something that really filtered down to partnerships and sole proprietors.
Mm-hmm.
So
we got about 15 seconds here, David, if you want to make your point.
This changed the whole face. You know, this goes to previous discussions about how the work has changed.
So what you're saying is that George Herbert Walker Bush's tax reform changed the nature of work in the United States, moved us from full-time to part-time, and the whole gig economy was set up by Bush. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I get it. That's fascinating. I don't know a whole lot about the 1989 Bush tax reform, but it sounds like I need to. I'll look into it. David, thank you for the call, and thanks for the heads up. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment on the True People's Media.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Truth to multinational corporations. We'd really rather you didn't know all about. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around. We'll be right back with more of your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. In answer to the persons, who called in and said who and what is Q and what's going on with that, one part of the Q conspiracy story that I had completely forgotten is that there's actually this guy, Q, who's part of the deep state, who is like manipulating things behind the scenes to protect Donald Trump. And, you know, we're all cheering for him and rooting for him. And apparently, Sean just shared a story with me. Q arrested Bill and Hillary Clinton at George Bush's funeral. And it was covered up by the media. I mean, this is how weird these stories get. Anyhow, Cliff in Canyon Country, California. It's Anything Goes Friday. Cliff, what's on your mind?
Morning, Tom. Hey, real quick, what we all just witnessed with the Bush Sr. Parade here, You know the same exact thing's going to happen with Henry Kissinger whenever that person expires.
I doubt it, but we'll see. Yeah, I doubt it. I mean, Henry Kissinger has been broadly regarded by many Americans as a war criminal ever since Vietnam, and particularly when he drew up the plans to nuke the North. I mean, he's Dr. Strangelove was based on Henry Kissinger, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't have that much faith in the media to.
They'll do pomp and circumstance, but it's not going to be 3 days worth. It'll be a few hours on TV, I'm guessing, but yeah.
All right, anyway. Very good. So in 1975, I started working a job right after high school. And I don't remember my exact hourly wage, but I'm sure in today's dollars, it's got to be over $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you've talked about this extensively. If wages would have kept up with production, where would we be?
Right.
But doesn't it seem like what all these people with the $15 an hour, it's a good thing they're going to get. You know, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. I mean, that's like less than $300 a week.
Right.
$1,200 a month. That's why you have to work 2 40-hour week jobs at that wage just to equal one 40-hour week job at $15 an hour. But even at 15, Tom, that's only $600 a week before taxes. That's $2,400 a month before taxes.
Right.
So that might work for a young adult living at home, but for a single mom or a working mom or somebody living like where I live in Southern California, that money doesn't go very far. And with the cost of living always rising,
right.
I mean, it's a real struggle.
This is why it's so important for local communities and states to do what initially SeaTac Washington and then Seattle did, and then Washington State, I believe, which has raised the minimum wage. To one that's appropriate to their local conditions. Because a $15 an hour minimum wage in Mississippi, in parts of Mississippi, may actually be a living wage. But a $15 minimum wage in Los Angeles or New York City, in Manhattan anyway, is not going to get you much.
Right, but that's why the federal wage at $7.25 is so.
Oh, it's obscene.
So unfair.
Yeah, it needs to be raised to $15. I mean, it's that's just like a reasonable starting point. Yeah.
And one more thing, real quick, Tom. We used to hear about getting a Wall Street, transaction tax, like with the Goldman Sachs supercomputers, charging, a tenth of a penny per share. I haven't heard anything about that lately. I'm wondering if the new House might try to bring up
Bernie is still flogging that as one of the ways to pay for his Medicare for All program. It would generate billions of dollars in tax revenue, although it would slow down the high frequency trading, it's not going to produce quite as much money as I think everybody thinks. But it was called a Stet tax. It was passed in the 1930s by Franklin Roosevelt to pay for the Securities and Exchange Commission when he invented the SEC and put Joe Kennedy in charge of it, saying it takes a crook to catch a crook. And that Stet tax, security transaction excise tax, is what Stet stood for. That was on the books from the mid-30s when it was first put into place until I think it was 1964. And by that point in the 1960s, that Stet tax, which was supposed to fund the SEC was running on a budget of $5, $10, $15 million a year, something like that. And the Stet tax was producing like $200, $300 million a year. And so Congress looked at that and said, we really don't need this tax anymore. Well, I mean, Congress didn't look at it. Obviously, the bankers in Wall Street looked at it and lobbied Congress. And so we got rid of it. And that was the beginning, in my opinion, of the explosion of the stock market and the explosion of really bad behavior on Wall Street. So, I'm totally in favor of bringing back the Stet tax. Bernie calls it the Robin Hood tax. It's actually a way of regulating the banks. I mean, taxes, A, they raise money for government, but their principal reason for existence is not just to fund the government, it's to change behavior. We give people a tax break if they get a mortgage to encourage people to buy houses rather than renting. We give business tax breaks for R&D to encourage them to develop new products. Taxes change behavior. And it's one of the reasons why when the top tax rate was 73%, before that 91% on income over $3 million a year, fat cats stopped paying themselves at $3 million a year and started paying their employees better. And if we put a Stet tax into place, you would see Wall Street change their behavior too. Cliff, great point. Thanks a lot for calling and bringing it up. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
I'm glad that guy brought up that tax. I've been calling you for how long about that?
Yeah, about 15 years, Corky, I think.
No, I like Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, it's his 90th birthday today.
God bless him. I hope he lives to be 200.
Yeah.
He was the one that explained to me how they did Noriega in Panama.
Mm-hmm.
They went in with the B-1B bomber. That's the first time they ever admitted they had it.
Mm-hmm. The stealth bomber, yeah.
This was
during George Herbert Walker Bush's presidency. He had to take out Noriega because Noriega was threatening to expose the crimes of the very wealthy in the United States. So they'd been laundering their money in Panama. And that's why Noriega was brought to the United States rather than put in a Panamanian prison. And it's why he was essentially kept in solitary confinement until he died. He was never allowed to speak to the press.
No, I know that. He only spoke to him once, and after that, they shut him down.
Yep.
And, he was the one that brought in the B-1B bomber against an Air Force that basically had Piper cubs. It was overkill.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make sure that nobody else, he was laundering the drug money.
Noriega was, and I know.
And that really kicked off the
bank. He had been laundering the drug money. It appears, I don't have evidence of this, and this would be a useful thing, a question to ask Lamar, because he's so up to his eyeballs in this stuff. But my recollection is that the allegation that was being made, not by Bush when he was, arresting and imprisoning Noriega, but by the people who were familiar with the issue, was that the Iran-Contra money, where George Herbert Walker Bush had cut this deal with the Iranians, not only to hold the hostages before the election, but after the election to continue selling them weapons. I mean, that was part of the payoff for holding the hostages. Selling them weapons, that money had to go someplace. It couldn't come into the United States because it was against the law to sell weapons to Iran, and it was against the law to do business with Iran. They were under sanctions. And so that money was being run through Panamanian banks, and then coming out of those Panamanian banks was going to pay for the weapons that were being smuggled into the death squads in Central America that we called the Contras, which set up the disaster that we've got right now on our southern border, where you have, you know, three countries melting down because George Herbert Walker Bush, as vice president, was in charge of and then continued as he was president, of this program of smuggling these weapons down to Central America. And that's why he pardoned Caspar Weinberger, because when he left the White House, because Caspar Weinberger was up to his eyeballs in this as Reagan's, defense secretary, as I recall?
I think so.
Yeah.
But Noriega was taking one quarter out of every dollar that he laundered.
Huh.
And he laundered billions.
Yeah, no doubt
and
about it.
And that really ticked off the banks in the U.S. because they were doing the same thing. When they were laundering money, they would take one quarter out of every dollar they laundered.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm guessing that there was a very, very profitable scheme going on. Corky, I want to get one more call in here before we hit a hard break. Grant in Kenmore, Washington. Hey, Grant, what's on your mind?
So the other day you asked me to put my environmental meme onto a bumper sticker.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of threw me for a whirl because I think it's probably more appropriate on a billboard, bumper sticker, car bumper sticker thing just seemed wrong to me. So my bumper sticker would be habitable planet is not equal to or greater than an inhabitable planet.
Okay, I think anybody who's taken algebra would understand that, but you need something that a Trump voter can understand. Grant?
We got to get everybody together as one community.
Well, it would be nice if we had, if our public schools were well funded so that everybody actually understood algebra. It's like or basic math, I guess, greater than or equal to. But I'm not even sure that that's actually part of algebra. It might just be part of math 101. But I think we still need a bumper sticker, Grant. No offense.
Okay.
I mean, I appreciate your efforts and keep thinking about it. This is about soil health, right? Wasn't that what you called about last week?
That's always my subject is natural resources. Go nematodes is maybe a
yeah, again, somebody who hasn't had high school science wouldn't get that. So again, you're not going to get the Trump voters, but I perfectly, I understand and agree. We've got to, and in fact, healthy soil is one of the best, most efficient, most rapid ways to draw down carbon out of the atmosphere. So spot on, but we're still on the hunt for a bumper sticker. Maybe we can crowdsource this, Grant. Grant, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to KBCS. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to check in with Talk Media News in about 4 minutes here.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Stick around. We're going to find out what's going on in the world. It's your media support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman program. And welcome back. Rich in Indiana. Hey, Rich. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Thank you so much, Tom. Excellent show, as usual.
Thank you.
I wanted to offer the idea that was brought up by that caller from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and his awareness of working for less. Here in Indiana, everyone needs to remember all the time, this is a right to work for less state, and that was overseen by former Governor Mike Pence.
Right.
And he also wrote some very cruel and anti-LGBT stuff that was camouflaged as religious rights restoration, yada yada yada. I don't know.
Right. It was the right for religious people to be bigots. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's pretty much a snake pit here. We lost Donnelly as one little facet of the Democratic Party, and was replaced by this grinning monster millionaire who trades with China and doesn't support by his business activities any jobs for Indiana.
You're talking the new governor of Indiana. What's his name?
No, not the governor, but the guy that Joe Donnelly lost to.
The senator.
Braun, B-R-A-U-N, I
Brown,
think.
Yeah.
Braun, Brown.
Yeah.
The guy's a no good Nick.
Mm.
And so the other thing to remember is what I brought in a conversation a while back when I heard this this business owner who does like a manpower kind of gig economy placement worker service. His company has naming rights to the tall building downtown, and his statement was, "This is like the best kept secret. This wonderful state, you know." And what he's talking about is millionaires moving to Indiana and taking over.
Yeah, yeah. And because Mike Pence turned it into a right to work for less state, the millionaires can move in, take over, and be guaranteed a healthy workforce. By healthy, I mean a large workforce of basically desperate people.
People that are in a precarious situation.
Do you think, Rich, that the people of Indiana, I mean, you live there. Do you think the people of Indiana have figured out the scam that Mike Pence played on them? I understood that he was, that one of the reasons he jumped at vice president was because he didn't think he could get reelected governor. Although it turns out it was Paul Manafort who made him vice president, essentially. You know, he kept Trump's plane overnight in Indiana because he didn't want Chris Christie as VP. Why did Paul Manafort want Mike Pence? I don't understand.
My interpretation of what I experience on the ground here is the bigotry.
Yeah.
There is such horrific racism and misogyny. White guys are on top, and what anything that is a challenge to that is targeted and attacked.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the Trumpers that are looking at boner pills and other issues like that. Well, that's what these guys are.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Rich, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Indiana. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Luke Vargas will be with us in just a moment. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Loving What You Do. Ellen Ratner's new book, on the line with us, is the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News at the UN in New York, Luke Vargas. You can follow him on Twitter as The Courier. Luke, welcome back to the program. The U.S. trade deficit is at a record high. What does how does Trump reconcile this with his promise more than 2 years ago that he would be the guy who was going to get the trade deficit down?
Well, he hasn't talked about it. That's how he's reconciling it. I mean, this is President Trump's sort of most often cited gauge of whether U.S. trade policy is going in the right direction or not,
right.
No matter the fact that most economists think that's sort of an erroneous measure to be looking at. This is not an all-time record, Tom. It's a 10-year high. And bear in mind that the deficit does swing pretty wildly when there are economic downturns. So
the trade deficit, yeah.
2000, right. In the wake of the economic downturn in 2008, 2009, I believe you saw the U.S. trade deficit drop by nearly half. So, when American purchasing power starts to weaken, that can address the trade deficit. I don't think Trump's going to want that, even if it does lower the trade deficit in the next few years.
Right.
But it's really important to point out, this is the fifth straight monthly increase in the trade deficit, and the trade deficit with China has now reached an all-time monthly record. So that's not not just in recent past. One of the things you're seeing here, and just to put it in numerical terms, I guess, take the last 13 months or so, the trade deficit has risen, all told, about 11.5%. So this is quite a substantial amount.
What this tells you, though, in essence, is that A, the economy has been strengthening and there's more money in consumers' pockets because they're buying more stuff.
Yes.
But more importantly, B, that American consumers, when they're buying things, are not buying things manufactured in the United States. And that's the consequence of 30 years of this neoliberal trade policy.
Yeah.
Which Trump is right about, by the way.
Right, that that manufactured goods have a major trade deficit on them.
Yeah.
In the service economy, the U.S. has a major, it's the opposite. We have a giant trade surplus in the orders of hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right, in large part because of Microsoft and Google and Apple.
Exactly. And I'll just point out one other element that's leading to this rising trade deficit that we didn't get a chance to mention, which is that exports are falling. You know, and this is, is, you know, something that Trump's own experts acknowledge is happening. They think that as, you know, I don't know, maybe something to the trade problems with China are resolved, that the effect that these tariffs are having basically in cutting various U.S. exports like soybeans, that's going to end. But you are seeing several trends here. So one is that drop in exports. You are also seeing a big increase in imports from China that may also be temporary. Some economists have said, look, this is a lot of firms who rely on Chinese intermediate products and raw materials, realizing that, you know, tariffs are probably going to keep increasing. They were slated to increase on January 1st. And a lot of companies basically purchased extra Chinese materials to keep in their warehouses, fearing that they might increase in price. So things are unstable, but they don't look to be going in the direction that Trump wants them to be.
The other thing that amazed me, Luke, is I saw, there was an article in the Financial Times this week about how, as I recall, it was 37%, it might have been 27% of all the new vendors in the last certain period of time, year or 2 years, on Amazon were actually in China. And I'm finding that about one out of five things that I buy on Amazon is now being shipped to me directly from China. And by not going through, you know, a Walmart, they're not, if there are tariffs on those things, they're not. No tariff is being paid because they're being shipped directly from China. You know, this is probably not on Trump's radar screen, but it is distorting the whole thing.
You'd think it would be, given his frustration with Jeff Bezos. That seems like the perfect thing.
Yeah, you would think so. You know, somebody ought to call him up and tell him. Anyhow, Heather Nauert.
To the Tom Hartman Show.
Yeah.
He listens to Fox News.
Right. Tell me about Heather Nauert.
All right. So we've got an appointment for the ambassadorship to the United Nations. This had been a long time coming. I mean, there have been some reports in places like The Times and in Time magazine the last few days suggesting there may have been some hesitancy on Nauert's part to take this position at this time.
So has she ever been an ambassador anywhere?
She has not.
Has she ever even worked in a position, you know, a policy position, a think tank or something?
No, but you could argue that Fox News is somewhat of a conservative think tank, but that's another story. I mean,
so this is what she did. She was just a host on Fox and Friends. She was the woman sitting on the couch.
And to be fair, she has been very involved at the State Department as the spokesperson. And I argue, as and I will tell you and I'll tell everyone else, that I believe this, the job of State Department spokesperson is one of the more demanding and sort of detail-focused
and she's done a good job
jobs
there
in government. But that that still doesn't mean it's diplomatic experience,
right,
even if you've been on 65 foreign trips or whatever it is. So,
but has she done a good job there, Luke? I mean, is there a consensus?
I think she's widely seen to have been competent, and that, yes, even though there was a period at the very beginning of the administration where there were just basically no press encounters from the State Department, that she, you know, that those numbers have ticked up a little bit, and they are providing half decent interaction with the press. So I would say the important thing to remember here, though, is that we're learning that along with this, the role of UN ambassador is going to be downgraded. It is no longer going to be a cabinet level position. So you have a communicator in there, and she's going to be used, it seems, as a communicator, not as a diplomat. So that actually is going to be something we'll have to watch evolve over the next few months as she gets to work.
So she's no longer, if that is no longer a cabinet office, is she working on behalf of the State Department?
That's a great question. Who her? I believe she will be taking orders from Pompeo, but the line of command, I've got to look into that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Luke Vargas, chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News. You can follow him on Twitter at The Courier. And you can hear him every day by searching Luke Vargas wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.